Here at Monitor that when a fellow meets a girl in a discotheque up in New England, it's not a chance meeting. A computer matches them up. Look, Ma, I'm dancing with the girl of my dreams. So what if she's 7 feet tall, weighs 250? It's science, Ma. You don't argue with a computer. Well, it doesn't quite work out that way at this discotheque. We'll hear all about it in a couple of minutes. Music by Klaus Ogerman first. It's not unusual. Scratch a member of the young in crowd up around Worcester, Mass., you'll find a swinger with an IBM card. The card is a sort of a key to happiness. Big part of the fun and games at a new discotheque up there. The story from reporter Cliff Luce.
Today, the Monitor microphone is at the East Coast's first and most swinging computerized discotheque, the Red Pony Happenings in Worcester, Massachusetts. We have the man behind the computerized discotheque idea. Mr. Ron Pibuta is our guest. Ron, give us the basics. What is a computerized discotheque?
Well, what we've done is essentially taken computerized date match systems, which, as you know, are very popular in discotheques, which are also very popular. We've put the two together, and we've come up with a super type of discotheque. So people come in to the lounge, they fill out a form, it's a questionnaire. The information is then transferred to IBM cards, and they are given a number, and they have that number on a permanent basis. So anytime they come into the discotheque from that point on, all they have to do is go to the Dater Mater booth, and there's a woman in there who handles all of the transactions. They tell her what their number is, and 5, 10, 15 minutes later, they have their match, the girl or guy that is most suitable to them, based upon the information given and the number of people in the place at the time, or the people in the place at the time. And it's gone on like wildfire. We've had Boston radio and television down here. Playboy magazine has been down to look it over and hopefully do a story. At least that's what we understand at this stage of the game. And the place is just jammed constantly. We're turning away 300 to 400 people a night.
So it's actually the ideal situation for a young single male or female.
Right, we serve liquor in here, and in Massachusetts you have to be over 21 in order to drink alcohol and beverages. Consequently, all of the people in here are over 21. And it has caught on, as I say, and some of the comments of the people are extremely funny. We've tried to make this as anonymous for the individual as possible. In other words, when they're matched, we don't want them to stand up and have everybody looking at them. People want their anonymity. And so all they have to do is just go up to the booth, and then they find the girl. All the chairs are numbered. So they'll go up to the booth, and the data mater will say, "Well, sir, your match is number 34, and she's sitting at chair 18. So they go over there, and they say, "Hi, I'm Joe Schwartz, and I guess I'm your match for the evening." Well, automatically, there's a rapport between the two people. They have something to talk about. There's an air of legitimacy to it. It's not like a pickup, and it's kind of a fun sort of a thing, and there's no obligation on the part of either people. I might add that we wash our hands of the whole thing after the matches are made. We have no responsibility or obligation for what happens to the relationship after that point, after we match them.
What brought about the idea for the computerized discotheque? Is this being done anywhere else in the country?
Well, the only place, so far as we know, where it's being done is Los Angeles and San Francisco. The need for a discotheque in Worcester, Massachusetts arose because there isn't one. And this is a city of over 200,000 people in just the metropolitan area alone, never mind the surrounding towns. You can add, about 500,000 people, and there's no discotheque. Consequently, we had a corner on the market just from the discotheque alone. But to draw and to get the publicity, which is what we wanted, the computerized aspect came in. And as you can see from sitting here and observing the throngs, it's just been an overwhelming success.
Any humorous incidents ever come about as a result of a boy meeting a girl here on the dance floor?
Well, as a computer is not infallible, certainly, it can make a mistake. We had one guy we matched up with another guy. Neither one of them were overwhelmed with joy at the whole thing, but they came back a little perturbed, and diplomatically we explained that it was a malfunction of the machine and took care of that situation rather quickly.
We were talking with the man behind the idea for the computerized discotheque, the first one here on the eastern coast of the United States, Mr. Ron Pabuda, here at the Red Pony Happenings in Worcester, Massachusetts. This is Cliff Luce returning you to Radio Central.
Just one little thought there, folks. Suppose that 100 guys come in and fill out cards, and they all match only one girl. I guess she'd have a rather large evening. Of course, if you want to be really scientific, stay single. Have a couple of tiny bubbles from Don Ho.
Tiny bubbles. Make me happy. Make me feel fine. Tiny bubbles. Make me warm all over. With a feeling that I'm gonna love you till the end of time. So here's to the golden moon, and here's to the silver sea, and mostly here's a toast to you and me. Tiny bubbles,
tiny bubbles,
in the wine, make me happy,
make me happy,
make me feel fine,
make me feel fine.
Tiny bubbles,
tiny bubbles,
make me warm.
At 17 minutes past the hour, you are on the Monitor Pekin.
Dr. Joyce Brothers is the answer to your problems. Weekdays at 9 on the Big Voice of Big Town USA, WNBC, New York. Big Town USA. Focal point of the world, place of people, place of greatness, whose environs encompass the totality of today, headquarters of the United Nations, of the world of communications, center of the arts, Big Town, USA, place of action, holding forth its promise of now, making each moment alive. And WNBC, the big voice of Big Town, communicates these living moments to you.
The topless fad in nightclubs and restaurants. Would you think it would go over in a place like St. Petersburg, Florida? A report on that coming up in about 5 minutes. Monitor Music by Gunter Kallmann.
Wish me a rainbow and wish me a star. All this you can give me wherever you are. And dreams for my pillow and stars for my eyes. And a masquerade ball where our love wins first prize.
Prison in Brazil was fired, made him angry. So his last day on the job, he let out all the inmates. And the police rounded them all up, and the count in jail has been increased by one, the former warden. And man, does he have friends.
A while ago, I was a lonely girl, without a goal or purpose in this world. I thought of life and made my plans to find myself a wealthy man, it's true. Then I met you. And I turned it on a page of life and found out what your happiness can be. Inside of me must have its turn. What meant so much to me before has no importance anymore, it's true. Yes, sir. another page of math and found out what I really want is you.
That's the latest by Mrs. Fisher. Topless go-go girls in St. Petersburg, Florida, are rapidly changing that city's reputation as a staid, quiet haven for the elderly. The dancers appear 7 nights a week at the Cock and Bull Club, which is always packed. Report now from Bill Hill.
Owner of the Cock and Bull Club, 38-year-old John Taylor, has been crying all the way to the bank as controversy continues to embroil his topless operation, now in its 10th month. Efforts to have his club closed and tops put back have been unsuccessful. It was no understatement when I asked.
John, you've started a pretty controversial operation here. You have a sign here. What's required to, if I want to come in here and view the show, what's required of me to be able to come in and watch it?
Well, the main point is that no one will be offended. We do not wish to corrupt anyone's morals or to offend anyone. If you want to partake, it is here. If you do not, stay home.
What does that sign say?
A topless go-go show will be presented this evening. The female bosom will be exposed. Do not enter if such a show will offend you or outrage your sense of decency.
How long do you think you'll be able to remain in business?
Well, we hope forever.
What type of girl seems to go topless for you?
You do have to be an extrovert.
Why do you think they dance?
Why do they dance? It's a form of expression, I think, Bill, that they are completely uninhibited, to a point, that is, other than our own rules that we set forth that they must follow. But this way they express themselves through modern dance. Uninhibited dance is what I would actually express it as.
When I questioned a couple of the topless dancers, the answers were not what I had expected. For example...
Sonny, you've just gotten through one of your numbers. How long have you been dancing as a topless go-go girl?
Oh, here about 3 months now.
What does your boyfriend think about your dancing?
Well, I don't think he thinks I'm a fallen woman because I'm a topless go-go girl, and I don't think he's ashamed of me or anything. He really doesn't seem concerned about it in particular.
Then there's Patty, 20 years old, married, a bit nervous when I asked her.
Is this your first time out as a topless go-go girl?
Yes, it is. I first rehearsed this afternoon, and before that, no one had seen me semi-nude except my husband.
What does your husband think about your dancing?
Well, my husband wants me to get a hold of myself and gain self-assurance and things like that. And he's proud of my body, and he doesn't feel that it would be anything detrimental to our marriage.
Do you consider dancing as a topless go-go girl obscene?
Well, I don't see anything more obscene in doing that than walking down the beach in a brief bikini, which I've been doing for years. It's just a little step beyond.
And while scattered protests continue to arise from St. Petersburg's moralists, John Taylor and his topless cock and bull club continue to go, go, go. This is Bill Hill in St. Petersburg for Monitor.
When Mr. Taylor first opened his club, he and his dancers were arrested for disorderly conduct. And as we understand it, a request was made for a jury trial, and the case went to criminal court but never was prosecuted. The state spent weeks questioning patrons in an effort to build a case on the morals and decency statute, and then they gave up. Money, apparently, is the draw for the girls. They receive about half again what a secretary could expect to earn. We'll have, I imagine, pretty soon somebody will open a club and say, guaranteed, dressed girls. Well, we'll have reports from Las Vegas, Chicago, and Roanoke, Virginia later, as well as reports from other countries on the topless situation. Thank you. I would like to apologize to Connie Francis, who is not Mrs. Fisher. That's Connie Stevens. Our Day Will Come is the tune you just heard, Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. Back shortly with more of Monitor 67, Coast to Coast on NBC. In Roswell, New Mexico, we're heard on KSWS.
William Manchester, author of the controversial book The Death of a President, will meet the press in a one-hour special tomorrow on the NBC Radio Network.
Wetson's for people who like delicious food. At Wetson's, you're sure to enjoy those palate-pleasing hamburgers, golden brown french fries, and Wetson's thick shakes. Those and other delicious taste treats are now awaiting you at Wetson's. In Inwood, Long Island, there's a Wetson's at 20 Sheridan Boulevard. In Hazlet, New Jersey, a Wetson's is located on Route 36 next to the Airport Plaza Shopping Center. 1.5 million adult volunteers are giving scouting to 4 million boys in America. Help them by giving your dollars to the Boy Scout Fund Drive.
Sportscaster Bill Mazur knows the answers. He wrote the book. Call him weeknights at 5 on the big voice of Big Town USA, WNBC, New York.
At 30 minutes past 8 o'clock, it's 37 degrees in New York, and it's clear. This is Jerry Damon with Metropolitan Area Headlines. The war has resumed in Vietnam. After a 4-day truce during the Asian New Year, both sides went back to battle at 6 p.m. New York time. The U.S. military command in Saigon says 20 American soldiers were killed during the truce as a result of ceasefire violations. The King of Morocco arrived in New York today for a week's visit. King Hassan II has more than 130 people with him in his entourage. He has taken no less than 50 rooms in the Hotel Plaza. Mayor Lindsay has taken away for 2 weeks the chauffeur-driven limousines assigned to 3 of his top administrators. The mayor's action is the result of his aide's vehicles being parked in a no-parking area near City Hall. The Brooklyn housewife, who gave birth to quintuplets a week ago, went home today, but the 3 surviving children of Mr. and Mrs. Lionel Harris remain in Jewish Hospital, where they are reported doing fine so far. Mississippi Congressman John Bell Williams announced today that he's going to run for governor. The veteran Democratic legislator, who was stripped of his congressional seniority because he supported Barry Goldwater in 1964, said he's the only true conservative in the race. Also running is former Mississippi Governor Ross Barnett. California Governor Ronald Reagan was booed and shouted down by thousands of students and faculty members at a demonstration in Sacramento today. And tomorrow, 160,000 state employees plan to put up picket lines because Reagan is asking them to work voluntarily, but without pay, on Washington and Lincoln's birthdays. The New York Port Authority released a report today showing that more than 28.5 million people used the 3 metropolitan area airports last year. That's 10% more than the year before. A select congressional committee investigating Adam Clayton Powell wants to talk to the congressman's estranged wife and his traveling secretary, but U.S. Marshals have been unable to find them to serve subpoenas issued by the committee. In Washington, 2 Methodist churchmen are accusing the Secretary of State of making negotiations for peace more difficult at a time when North Vietnam appears to be showing an increased readiness to talk. Now the weather for the New York area. It's 37 degrees and it's clear. Humidity 48%. The barometer is rising from 29.80 inches. Wind is from the northwest at 13 miles per hour with gusts up to 29. Partly cloudy, windy, and very cold tonight with temperatures dropping to the low 20s by morning is the forecast. Sunday will be quite cold, fair in the morning, and clouding up in the afternoon with a chance of snow late in the day or at night. The highest temperature Sunday in the mid-20s, lowest Sunday night around 20 degrees. Repeating our present temperature, 37 degrees, the WNBC time, 26.5 minutes before 9 o'clock. That's late metropolitan and worldwide news up to the moment. Next news from the NBC newsroom at 9 o'clock with Neil Boggs. Bulletins, of course, will be broadcast at once. This is Jerry Damon.
Morgan here for Monitor. Dateline, February 11. It's nice that it's February, the shortest month. Nothing much happens in February. Oh, it is American Heart Month, that's important. But, for example, did you know that it's also Frozen Potato Month? It's kite-flying season in Thailand. And they have the Carrier Pigeon Olympics in Austria. Pretty exciting stuff like that there. And near the end of the month, in a fit of merriment, there will be Pencil Week. Pencil Week, that's right. They probably have a little lobby somewhere. I tell you, there's a lot to look forward to in Feb. You're right, I left out Valentine's Day. Let me out of it. My last Valentine not only served frozen potatoes, she was one. Or to put it another way, the honeymoon is over.
When your husband doesn't touch your best dessert, when you find a purple lipstick on his shirt, then, my dear, it's clear the honeymoon is over, and you better be on the alert.
When your wife decides that she should wear the pants, when she puts you down each time she gets the chance, then, my dear, it's clear the honeymoon is over, and you'd better search for some romance.
Time you saw ya, old Trustee.
Your wife is bored by every joke you tell, then, my dear, it's clear the honeymoon is over, and you may as well pack up, move out, tell him, darling, beware.
Steve, and that's Edie. Next, Monitor on Stage, another performance recorded live at a leading night spot. This by Bob Newhart.
I just closed up my apartment in Los Angeles, and one of the things that I had to send to Chicago, which is my home, was a cat. It was a Siamese. I didn't know this, but you have to get a little case, and you have to get a health certificate, and they give you pills you give to them, and it knocks them out, you know. And I've never seen a high cat before, you know. And the only way you can tell he's high is he keeps saying, like meow, man. But otherwise, you can't tell. I had kind of a traumatic experience, I think it was, with a cat. I didn't know this when I got it, but when a cat gets to be about, 8 months old, you have to make a decision, see? Now, the thing is, are you going to keep him in the apartment all the time, or will he run free? If he's going to run free, you don't have to make a decision. If you're going to keep him in the house, you better make a decision. One of the symptoms, they tell me, about the time you should start thinking about is when they start crawling up the drapes and walking across the top of the ceiling. They're very much like humans in that regard. And, of course, this had been weighing on my mind for several weeks, and forget it if you try to put yourself in the cat's place. Just forget it. You've got to take a detached attitude toward this thing. So anyway, I made the decision. I decided to get George, Nutty George, fixed. They call it fixed. And it is fixed, let me tell you. So I sent him to the vet, and I got him back in a couple days. And ever since then, all he does is sit on top of the television and just stare at me.
Monitor on stage with Bob Newhart. You are on the Monitor Beacon.
Your day starts with Big Wilson, and you're in the big time weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on the big voice of Big Town USA, WNBC, New York.
Hi, this is Brad Crandall. Listen to me on WNBC, the big voice of Big Town USA, weeknights after the 9 o'clock news, as I keep you in touch with Big Town, entertainment capital of the world, where the Casino Theater in the 1890s was the birthplace of the Floridora Girl and the Belle of New York, the first American musical comedy to make a hit abroad. Big Town, USA.
Don't forget, February is Heart Month. Give your heart a lift with a gift to your heart association. Your contribution will help turn the tables on our nation's number one health enemy, heart and circulatory diseases. Make your contribution now to your heart fund. Give, so more will live. You can help educate handicapped people so they can learn job skills and get work experience through your contribution of materials to Goodwill Industries.
And a good example of why is NBC Radio's Second Sunday series. Tomorrow evening, the series will present a 55-minute program entitled Red China, The Struggle for Power. Host Wells Hangen in Hong Kong, newsmen John Rich in Tokyo and Kenneth Bernstein in Moscow will evaluate the developments in Red China and include a background study of Red China's communist heritage. Make a note to listen tomorrow evening over most of these NBC stations. Earlier in the evening, there will be a full hour devoted to Meet the Press, with William Manchester, author of the book Death of a President. This tune by James Darren.
All the words I can recall could never capture all the loveliness of you.
Monitor Sports. Joe Garagiola.
I want to go on record right now as being the fan of a certain fighter. His name is Boone Kirkman, and he's a 21-year-old heavyweight who's been fighting in the Northwest. I don't know Boone Kirkman. As a matter of fact, I never saw Boone Kirkman, but I'm rooting for him to go a long way, and the reason is simple. Boone Kirkman is managed by Jack Hurley. Jack Hurley is a fight manager of the old school. When the Internal Revenue asks Jack Hurley what he does, he puts down fight manager, just as he's been doing since he was 18 years old. Today, he's 69. And he recently told his old friend, Bill Hines, regardless of how this one turns out, he's my last fighter. That's all the more reason to hope Boone Kirkman makes it. Jack Hurley is not a special kind of fight manager just because he's been at it for so long. He's always been special. His greatest fighter was Billy Petrol. Billy was an Italian kid out of Fargo, North Dakota, who could really fight. He looked like an Indian, and Jack used to send him into the ring wearing an Indian blanket instead of a bathrobe. He also named his fighter the Fargo Express. Patrol had over 250 fights, but never held a title. Along the way, he beat some champions, too. Men like Tony Canzoneri, Bat Battalino, and Jimmy McLaren, but no titles himself. The main reason was that Jack Hurley tried to avoid his fighter becoming a champ. Why? Hurley always claimed that when you get a title, then the boxing commissions make your decisions for you. He thought Patrol would be better off if Hurley made those kind of decisions. Was Hurley right or wrong? Well, championships are nice to have, but when Billy Patrol finally hung up that Indian blanket in 1934, he had something else that was pretty nice, $200,000. Hurley had a problem child fighter one time named Vince Foster. In a business that's seen a few mixed-up guys, Foster stood out. He'd read the Bible all day, but at night he couldn't stay out of trouble. And one day somebody asked Hurley if he could make Foster a champion in a year. Jack said, maybe, if it don't get dark between now and then. Then there was Harry Matthews, a light heavyweight from Seattle. Hurley brought him to New York to fight Irish Bob Murphy, and Matthews beat him and looked like an outstanding fighter while he was doing it. Hurley had been telling the press how great his boy was, and now he said he wanted to get a fight with Rocky Marciano for the title. Marciano knocked him out in the second round. And speaking of Matthews, I remember a story I heard once about how he and Jack Hurley got together. Matthews came to the manager and asked him to handle him. Hurley thought about it, watched the youngster work, and finally agreed. And then Hurley said, we'll split the money right down the middle. Matthews backed off a little and said, managers are only supposed to get one-third. Hurley just looked at him and said, what do you want, kid? Two-thirds of 100,000 or half of 200,000? Was it unfair? I doubt it. Jack Hurley always earned his end of the purse. I hope he's got some good ones ahead. This is Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports.
Joe is one of our regulars. Weekdays catch his sports show on NBC Radio.
I got caught like
Ray Charles singers. Despite the fact that London is supposed to be such a swinging city these days, you'd still expect the British to act with a certain amount of decorum when it comes to nudity in public places. For a report on the topless situation, here's George Montgomery, NBC News correspondent in London.
The Englishman loves his club, and his club is not always something like the State Athenaeum in London, where bishops gather to discuss the latest theological controversies. Very often the club is a place where the boys gather to watch the girls take them off. The basic point here is that a showman can get away with a lot more nudity in a club than he can in what is called a place of public music and dancing. But a club has to be registered. Its members have to be proposed and seconded, and you have to wait 48 hours after being accepted as a member before you can rush in and watch the strippers peel. Individual towns decide whether or not striptease is allowed in places of public music and dancing, shows, night spots, and the like, where anyone can go right in. But in a club, striptease is okay, no matter what the local officials think of it. So most night spots and working men's hangouts that have striptease are clubs. This doesn't mean they can get away with murder. Britain has anti-obscenity laws that cover club shows as well as public shows, and violators can get heavy fines and even jail sentences. London has just made history by becoming the first British city to approve striptease in places of public music and dancing. This happened because most of Soho's 20 so-called strip clubs weren't really clubs at all, but public places where you could walk right in. Too much police time was being taken up getting after them. The game wasn't worth the candle, since it was too hard to prove that the strip clubs were acting unclubbily. London's first topless restaurant opened in December, but after the police called, the owner said the waitresses would not continue topless until he got a club license. Toplessness is no craze here yet. On the stage, censored by the Lord Chamberlain, nudity is out, but in the movies, the industry's own censorship outfit is pretty liberal these days, and nudity is moderately in. And for people who want more daring movies and plays, there are, of course, film and theater clubs. George Montgomery, NBC News, London.
Now, from the British Crown Colony of Hong Kong, a survey of attitudes there toward public performances in the raw, from NBC News correspondent Wells Hangen.
Despite its reputation as a wide-open town, Hong Kong is conservative when it comes to topless waitresses and other exponents of public nudity. The reason lies more in the mentality of British colonial officials and middle-class Chinese than in the law books. Topless waitresses, for example, have been condoned by various courts in Britain, and Hong Kong courts are supposed to follow British legal precedents. They do, but the courts here have added a hooker. If a bare-breasted waitress moves, she's considered provocative. As one Hong Kong official says, you can't very well serve a drink without moving. The upshot is that there are no topless waitresses here, and there are not likely to be any. In theory, nightclubs enjoy fairly wide freedom, but they too are subject to police supervision and the easily aroused indignation of Hong Kong's mercantile community, both British and Chinese. One nightclub reporter here says minimum coverage for an entertainer has to be about a minimum bikini. The reporter says not all Hong Kong men frown on nude entertainers, but when asked if the Chinese would bring their wives or girlfriends to such shows, he said no, they'd bring their concubines and mistresses. 18 months ago, a Chinese girl appeared on a local beach in a topless bathing suit. Although her picture was published in some Hong Kong papers, the police ignored her, and no more topless girls have been seen around here. A few weeks later, an announcement that a topless African dance troupe would perform in Hong Kong Civic Center brought irate letters to both English and Chinese newspapers. Police previewed the show and found it acceptable, but no one has tried to bring the troupe back for a rerun. All films intended for public showing must be censored in Hong Kong, and the decision of a three-man official appeals board is final. Movies with lots of nudity are cut or banned. Privately shown blue movies are another matter. So, too, is the flood of pornography on Hong Kong newsstands. Compared to Tokyo, Hong Kong is almost straight-laced. But compared to puritanical red China, this place is Sodom and Gomorrah. It all depends on your point of view. Wells Hangen, NBC News, Hong Kong.
That's our Hong Kong topless report, where there ain't none. It's a real topless report. There'll be more throughout the evening from here and abroad on reactions to the topless foolishness. Thank you. Walter Wanderley, a tune called Take Care My Heart. NBC Monitor News coming up on the hour. This here is Morgan.
Second Sunday presents Red China, The Struggle for Power, a program special tomorrow on the NBC Radio Network.
The Lady of the Lunch, Mimi Benzel, entertains weekdays at noon on the Big Voice of Big Town USA, WNBC, New York.